Welcome. You're listening to a podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. I'm Ron Fraser. Today we're going to listen to a talk by Judge James Nelson. He's a former chairman of the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of the United States, and he's a retired judge from the Los Angeles County Superior Court. He's talking about human rights, and he suggests that we don't really have a good definition of human rights, and that our definition is likely to change in the future. And of course, these are just his personal views. He's not stating the official position of the Baha'i. So here's Judge Nelson.
Dear friends, when I was thinking of the talk to this audience, you have to realize that this is a very difficult audience in which to speak about human rights, because you are people who are doing things, understand the concepts of human rights in the world. And I was going to call the talk "The Care and Feeding of Human Rights." And then as I was perusing the subject, it occurred to me that maybe there is not in the world a clear definition of human rights, at least not as I, as a Baha'i, understand them. And that we ought to talk a little bit about the shifting sands of the definition of human rights. For even, I believe, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights does not cover the subject fully. Let me give you an example of what I mean about the shifting sands of the definition of human rights. That is to say, will we know human rights when we see them? That implies that we've not seen them all yet. And I have some evidence to present, which I think is convincing, that human beings' ideas of what are and what are not human rights change over time. And it is this change that we need to have an awareness of if we are to go confidently into the future and secure those as yet undefined rights for human beings. Human rights, at least in this nation, have been defined classically by the legal system and by political scientists as those which arise out of the natural order of things. Now, the natural order of things a couple of centuries ago may be different from the natural order of things now. And as one minister, when he was talking to his congregation, admonished them one morning, saying, "Now, if you don't feel as close to God today as you did before, who moved?" So if our notions of human rights are not the same now as they were before, who is it that has grown into an appreciation of what constitute these basic human rights? Is the natural order of things today what it used to be? There is a statement in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights echoing what appears in the Declaration of Independence of the United States of America, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and then those rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in our Declaration of Independence are set forth. Now, you have to consider what they were talking about, these wise men of that century, when they said all men. They didn't mean all men, and they certainly didn't mean women. What they meant was white males who owned property. Now, that was the natural order of things. And human rights existed then for white males that owned property. I dare say that in this modern age, we think of human rights on a broader scale of the natural order of things. Your chairperson announced at the beginning a series of United Nations conferences and summits on various issues. over the past decade or so. And they concerned such things as the issues of children, of the environment, and of women. Well, when the framers of our Constitution were talking, children had no human rights, the environment had no rights, and certainly women had no or not very many distinguishing rights. Is the natural order of things now different? I submit to this audience the recognition of that truth is self-evident. But are there rights out there which yet we do not envision? You see, when we talk now in political terms, and even in terms of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, we're talking about civil and political rights, or we're talking about social and economic rights, all of which are very valid things for human beings to have. But are those all of the rights that are attendant to human life? And I would like to pose to you that there is yet an undefined right that has not come into public consciousness. It's a delight to be a Baha'i and to address the subject of human rights from a consciousness which I found changed from my earlier perceptions of the natural order of things. Human rights are God-given rights. That's what it says in our papers that founded this government. It is acknowledged almost everywhere that these rights are inalienable, that they come by the nature of being human, that at birth you get something that the other kingdoms of existence don't, and those things you can't give away or you can't have taken from you legitimately, and that they vest with you throughout your life. But with that view of human society, we in the West are taught from very early age to look at life with the eye of difference. Look to see what's different about your neighbor. Look to see what is distinct. And subliminally, look to see what is bad. And therein, I think, lies the key to the shifting sands of the recognition of human rights. Because until I became a Baha'i, I never heard emphasized the idea that we ought to look at human beings with the eye of unity, with the eye of oneness, with the eye of humanness. That what attaches to us as a basic, fundamental human right, this as yet undefined human right, has nothing to do with the way we look or where we work or what language we speak or what color is our skin or what is our age or our sex. It has to do with the very essence of us, which is a spiritual essence. And therefore, to look with the eye of unity at the world makes one an optimist. We had a little discussion at our table about optimism and pessimism. And I would admit that it's very difficult to be seen as both sane and optimistic in this society. And yet you'll find the Baha'is going around with a silly grin all of the time, you know, like things are going to be wonderful. Now, it's not because we don't understand that things are not yet wonderful. It's just that I think we understand that they can be. And they can be because people like you, our honorees, and those of you who work beside them, make a difference in looking at the world with the eye of oneness. That which discriminates because people are human, not because they belong to a particular sect or society or language or race or age. And therefore, the undefined human right, which I think has arrived to be considered, is the right of every human being to be looked at as unique, as having a divine potential. If, for instance, we would rewrite a charter and give a set of unalienable rights to the new civilization, and we would say, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and we probably, to be politically correct, would have to put in all of the variations of mankind, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these rights are immortality, transcendence, and the pursuit of virtues and perfections. And if we were to look at each other as being immortal, transcendent, and in pursuit of virtues and perfections, we could help. Baha'u'llah, the founder of the Baha'i faith, says that we should regard man as a mine rich in gems of inestimable value. Seems to me that's a pretty good example. Certainly, not all of the gems are going to be apparent. That means that you might not like the looks of the mine when you first glimpse it. I think in the material world, miners do not generally have a very good environment in which to work in terms of beauty and comfort and convenience. But they do it not because the place looks so great, but because the gems within are so priceless. And if we learn to look, I believe, at each other with the eye of a miner seeking priceless gems, we will define for ourselves this inalienable human right to be seen with the eye of unity, so that our virtues may be exalted and our failures minimized and our unity guaranteed. For the purpose, I think, and I am absolutely convinced, having perused the Baha'i writings, the purpose of endowing human beings with human rights is not simply so that they should progress on this plane of existence and have a happy social life. It is that they should be endowed with those virtues and perfections which are eternal, and with which all the worlds of God may be transversed in love and in unity. I cite the example of this very room. We came in, many of us, as strangers, one from another, not knowing from what town or what area or what district we may have come. And yet in a very few moments, each of us has met someone with whom we have conversed and discussed the mighty issues of our time, the guarantee of the rights of human beings. We have for a moment learned to see each other with the eye of oneness. And I dare say we will not be as different going out as we were coming in. That's what you wonderful people who have been working in the field of human rights have been doing to the world. Producing folks who see other folks as identical in spirit and precious in potential. We thank you, and I thank you, for the elevation of this potential.
You've been listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. If you'd like to learn more about the Baha'i faith, the international website is baha'i.org. You'll find information about the faith, and there's also links to the Baha'i communities in several dozen countries around the world. Or you can check out our blog at ecbp.blogspot.com. That's ecbp.blogspot.com. There'll be information about all of our podcasts, and there's links to Baha'i websites and some other great Baha'i podcasts. If you want to talk to a human on the phone, call 1-800 22 Unite, or in Florida, call 850-543-2129. To leave us a voicemail toll-free, call 866-590-4545. And finally, you can email us at panhandlebahais@aol.com. Thanks for listening.